Good evening, everyone. This week's parsha is Parshas Pekudei Tavshin Ayin Tes. We'll start from the beginning, which is Perek Lamed Ches, chapter 38, Pasuk Chaf Aleph, verse 21. Eilav Pekudei HaMishkan. These are the reckonings of the Mishkan of the Tabernacle. Mishkan HaEdus, the Mishkan of Testimony, Asher Pukad Api Moshe, which was reckoned by Moshe's command. Avidas Levim Adisamar Ben Aaron HaKohen, the labor of the Levim, but was under the authority of Isamar, the son of Aaron HaKohen. Okay, so what we have here is a reckoning, a cheshbon, a calculation, to see a reckoning of exactly how much money was collected. And the Mishnah and Torah is going to go through, as the Pesukim go on, all the different materials and how much of the different precious metals and that were donated. And it goes through an exact calculation of how much was collected. And the question is, why is there a need for this calculation? Why is there a need for this reckoning? So this is really the question of the Medrash. And the Medrash asks, "V'lama asa imay mechashbon?" Why did Moshe have to make with everyone this calculation, this reckoning? HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yisparach Shemayim Aminai. We know Hashem trusts him. Shenamar, as it states, Lo Yichin Avdi Moshe B'chol Beisi Nemenu. Not so my servant Moshe and all my house, he is trustworthy. Why did Moshe have to make a reckoning? Is a problem someone's going to suspect Moshe Rabbeinu of stealing? He's got to make sure all the money is there that no one should suspect him. Hashem testifies he's trustworthy. V'loma Amar Lahem Moshe Boyu B'na Asek B'mishkan B'nechashav Lefneichem. Why did Moshe say to them, come, let us now get involved in the Mishkan and make a calculation in front of you. So why did Moshe do it? Ella, rather. Sheshama Moshe Letzana Yisrael Medaber Me'achrav. Moshe heard the Letzanim, the mockers, the scoffers of the Jewish people talking behind his back. Shenema, as it says, V'yokavai Moshe Ella, when Moshe would come to the tent, Yerid Amad Ha'anan V'mad Pesach Chaya V'diber Moshe. When Moshe would come to the tent, the pillar of cloud would come and stand in front of the opening of the tent and speak with Moshe. V'bitu acharei Moshe, and the Pasuk says that they would watch Moshe. People would come out of their tents and look and watch Moshe stand, look at the back of Moshe as Moshe was going to the tent where Hashem would speak with him. So there's two opinions exactly what were they looking at. So one opinion says, what were they saying? It says they were looking at the back of Moshe. What were they saying? It says the Medrash, they said like this, Chamei Kadal Divrei Da'amram. It's a very interesting way of putting it, but one person would say to the other, look at Moshe's neck. It looks very healthy. It's very big. Moshe got a nice big neck. Okay? So that's what one said. One guy would, Herschel would say to Getzel, Herschel, Getzel, look at Moshe Rabbeinu's neck. Look how healthy it is. The chaver oimer loy, and the friend will respond. Getzel says back to Herschel, Odim sheshalat al mish lechas hamishkan. Enatam avakish shehei asher. The person who had his hands over the money, the person who had control over the entire project of the Mishkan, and you want to know whether he's becoming rich, whether he became a rich man. You know, if he's big and healthy, that means he's rich. He can afford good meals. So one says to the other, look at Moshe Rabbeinu's neck. The other guy says, no, what do you expect? What do you expect? Okay? What do you expect? Kesheshama Moshe kach, when Moshe heard this, Amar lahem Moshe, Moshe said to them, Chayechem, nigmar ha-mishkan etei lachem cheshbon. He made a promise to everyone. Once the Mishkan is completed, I will give you a complete accounting of the money. That Moshe said, let's make a calculation, make an accounting, and that is the accounting that is mentioned here in the parsha. So according to one opinion of the Medrash, and this seems to be the opinion that the Medrash is working with to explain the purpose of the accounting, was because Moshe Rabbeinu heard people talking about him, basically accusing him or suspecting him of maybe taking some of the money for himself. It had to be a lot of money if he became rich enough to have a fat neck. I don't know how much it takes. I don't know how rich you have to be for that. But at the same time, it seemed that there were those that were saying that, look, you know, Look at him. He must be getting the money from his. He's got to be getting money from somewhere. So Moshe Rabbeinu made sure, very public, very transparent, the accounting of all the money that came. Okay. So, you know, these people that were, say this about Moshe, probably not the finest of people around, right? Not the finest people around. And the Ber Yosef has a very interesting explanation, or actually he elaborates on this. I mean, it's a bit mind-boggling that people should talk about Moshe Rabbeinu like that. I mean, we're talking about the people of the generation of the Midbar. Okay, so it means there were some of the generation of Midbar, there were those of the generation that clearly would seem, again, yeah. Actually, clearly would seem that yeah. we're not where they should have been. They're not acting the way they should have acted. But the Ber Yosef says, if you think about it, this kind of accusation against Moshe Rabbeinu is really outrageous. It's outrageous because it's outrageous to say that about Moshe Rabbeinu. But it's even more outrageous, the Ber Yosef says, because of the following. And that is that there is a very interesting halacha that says like this. You know, there are certain things that if you do them, kanoyim poigin boy, that means someone who is zealous for the honor of Hashem can kill you for it. So for instance, Boyal Aramis, that was what happened by Pinchas. If you know someone who is having marital relations with a Aramis, non-Jewish woman, and you know when it's happening, and you get the desecration is so great to you that you're the kind of person that is really truly bothered by this kind of desecration, you have the right to go ahead and kill that person. Now, what's important to know is that a person who has relations with a non-Jewish woman, you know, if you would look at all the prohibitions of the Torah, and you would go ahead and say, which one is worse, right? That would not be necessarily from the point of a sin. It is not from the top sins in itself. The problem is that even if the act is not a sin, but it's basically such a desecration of the holiness of a Jew and the holiness of the Jewish people, that's the severity of it. The severity of it is not so much the act per se as much as what the act itself means, what kind of a desecration of the holiness of the Jewish people that is. And therefore, it's not something that a court, that a Beis Din, a rabbinical court, has the power to administer punishment for. But it's got to be someone who really recognizes what it is. If someone who really recognizes the desecration of God's honor, the Jewish people's honor by such an act, somebody really recognizes that desecration, that person could go ahead and act upon it and kill that person for it. But in a regular sense, you can't, because just from the point of the act itself, the act is what it is. From the point of the desecration of the sanctity of the Jewish people, you got to be a kind of person, a certain kind of person, that you could react based on that. There is another interesting halacha of kanoim poigim boy, a situation where someone who is zealous has the ability to carry out the punishment, to kill somebody for it. And again, when you hear the kind of sin we're talking about here, it's really going to seem very, it's not going to seem appropriate. The Gemara says, there's a Gemara in Sanhedrin, a Mishnah Sanhedrin, Hagoinev es hakasva. If you steal one of the utensils of the Beis HaMikdash, I'm not sure which one it is exactly, what exactly describe it. But basically, it's a vessel, it's a kli sharis, it's a vessel that's used in the Beis HaMikdash, it belongs in the Beis HaMikdash. You steal that, kanoyim poigim vay. Someone who is zealous can kill you for it. What'd you do? What'd you do exactly? What's the severity here? What's the severity here? Where is the desecration of God's honor here that it should carry such a weight, such a punishment? And the way that the Ber Yosef explains it is the following. The Gemara asks the following question. Gemara wants to know there's two types of thieves. There's a ganef and there's a gazlan. Okay? Two different words for two different types of thieves. A ganef is a burglar. You know, breaks into your house at night and steals. A Goslin is a guy, he's big, and he's not afraid of nothing, and he walks over to you, and he beats you up, and he takes your money. Okay? That's the difference. A Ganif is someone who is basically, he's called a thief, a burglar, whatever you want to call him. This Ganif, this thief, is someone that clearly, he doesn't want to meet up with you. Doesn't want to meet up with you. That's why he does it at night. That's why he does it in a deceitful way. He doesn't want to meet up with you. So he's afraid of you. But who is he not afraid of?
Hashem.
He's not afraid of Hashem. He doesn't want to be caught by you. But what about the one who sees everything? So a Ganif basically cares about the human being's eye, but not Hashem's eye. The Goslin doesn't care about that. Doesn't care about anything. He's not afraid of you either. So the Ganif gives more, so to speak, the Ganif is giving more honor to the human being than to Hashem, because he doesn't want to be caught by the human being, but he doesn't care about being caught by Hashem. The Goslin doesn't care about anything. So therefore, the Torah says, if you're a Ganif and you're caught, you got to pay double. If you're a Goslin and you're caught, you just pay back the principal. So we see this, so says the Beis Yosef, we see this concept that the severity of a Ganif is someone who ignores Hashem. He's ignoring the fact that Hashem sees. He acts in a way that he says, I care about a man seeing me, but I don't care about God seeing me. Says the Beis Yosef, now let's take this a step further. You're in the Beis HaMikdash. You're in the Beis HaMikdash. And you see this little vessel and nobody's looking, right? And what do? You grab it and stick it in your pocket. The Beis HaMikdash, the place where you're supposed to experience the Ribbono Shel Olam the most. Again, right, we know the Ribbono Shel Olam is everywhere, right? But if there's a place that you should really experience, know the Ribbono Shel Olam is watching, it's the Beis HaMikdash. And even there you went ahead and stole? That is chutzpah. That is a desecration of God's honor. For a person who feels a desecration, he can kill that person for doing it. Okay? So therefore, says the Beis Yosef, if this, based on this, you're going to tell me that Moshe Rabbeinu stole the money from the Mishkan? Really? And of all people, he's the one who stole the money from the Mishkan? That's outrageous. It should be something that the person who went ahead and said, all right, he's the person who said it is, any person who makes a kind of a comment on Moshe Rabbeinu, it should be, who knows what should happen to him. But Moshe Rabbeinu has to reckon with it. Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't have better things to do with his time than make an accounting of the money that came. And he has to make them a promise. I'm going to make an accounting. What do you think? He went over to these two guys talking and he said, I'm going to show you I'm honest. It seems like he said it to, this was a public thing. It was a public thing. Moshe Rabbeinu said it, we're making a public accounting. But again, for what? For a couple of people making up stories that are absolutely outrageous? Says the Beis Yosef, but the answer is that unfortunately, we know what happens. We know what the power of leitzonus is. We know what the power of mocking is. When you mock someone, right, if you get up the guts to mock someone, no matter who that person is, right, once you go ahead and you break the ice, right? Everybody else is going to join in. Once one person tears that person down, everybody else is going to join in. Once one person has the chutzpah to talk about Moshe Rabbeinu like that, Moshe Rabbeinu understands this could get around. It's not necessarily going to stop here. It could continue and spread. And therefore, I have to nip this in the bud. I have to go in and make an accounting. And we find such a thing by Korach. There's a medrash that says that Korach, how did he get everybody to join and to come and to see what was going to happen? How did he get everybody to forget about not his group? How did he get the whole Jewish people to come and watch what was going to happen? So the medrash says, because the whole night he made leitzonus, he made fun. I don't remember all the details, but it says that Korach got up there and he started saying, you know, there's this old lady who lives near me. And I can't remember the whole details, but he made this whole detail. She did this, and the Kayanim took this away from her, and the Levim took that away from her, and this one took that away. He made fun of all the mitzvahs, showing how this poor woman, right? Nebuch, this poor woman, loses everything because of the mitzvahs that Moshe Rabbeinu taught us. Now, do you think that story was true? Do you think it all came together? Could have come together, but do you think it all came together? But he understood that once he starts mocking, he's got it. If he can get people to listen to it, to his stand-up comic, to his stand-up, what do you call it when you get up and do comedy on your own? Stand-up comedy. Stand-up. So what does he do? Stand-up comedy, okay? But again, making fun, and everybody knows what he's making fun about, that who he's making fun of. That's how he got them all involved. And that now, what's interesting to me here is that again, if we're talking about Litzanis, you know. If somebody were to walk over and say about Moshe Rabbeinu, he's a ganav. You don't call that litzanis. No litzanis. That's not the word. That's not mocking. That's accusing someone of doing something wrong. That's not mocking. Litzanis means that in some way you're mocking the person. You're somehow or another taking the person and somehow or another just without even necessarily saying they did something wrong, but kind of, you know, lowering their honor, mocking them, scoffing them, making fun of them to some degree. And if that's the pshat, if that's what's going on here, it would seem to me that the mocking, the litzanis was when one guy said to the other, look at him. That's the mocking. That's the starting point. That's the starting point. If somebody were to go in and say, somewhere or another, someone were to go in and look at Moshe Rabbeinu and say, where'd you get all that money from? You know, I don't know, whatever. Like they were just coming to walk in and wonder, like, where do you get the money from? And then they'd start. That's not litzanis. I don't think they'd fall under litzanis, right? To go at, you don't think you use that word litzanis when you're talking about, you know, accusing somebody directly of doing something wrong. Maybe you do if it's talking about such a great person. It would just seem to me that if the Ber Yosef is using the concept of litzanis, which is mocking, which in the case of Korach, yes, he mocked those mitzvahs, right? He made a joke about he mocked what was going on there. Where is the mocking of Moshe Rabbeinu? I think the answer is the mocking of Moshe Rabbeinu is one guy says to the other guy, look at his neck. Look at his neck.
There was a lot of money involved.
The point is that Moshe, to go ahead and be suspect of Moshe Rabbeinu, it's very clear that Moshe Rabbeinu, it seems pretty clear from the Midrash, Moshe Rabbeinu made this accounting because of those people. That's why he made it. And because of the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu knew that he had to clear the air, because these kinds of things spread and they grow like a cancer, therefore he knew he had to get up and make a reckoning and accounting of all the money.
The amount of gold, so many talents, it was like $70 million in today's money.
Could be.
Or more.
Could be.
Something in that range. There was a lot of money involved.
Could be.
There was a lot of money involved.
Okay, let's move on. we're now going to skip a couple of pages here. And we're going to go to page 534. This is Perek Lamed Tes, chapter 39, and it's verse Lamed Beis 32. Again, page 534. Now, we know that last week's parasha Vayakel was the parasha that described the construction of the Mishkan itself. Pekudei describes the making of the Big Day Kuna, the priestly garments. And Pasuk Lamed reads, Vateichel kol avodas Mishkan oyel moed, and all the work of the Mishkan was completed. I mean, after we talk about how all the garments were made, then it's all done. The Jewish people did according to all that Hashem commanded Moshe, so they did. And the next pasuk says, "Vayaviu es haMishkan al Moshe." They brought the Mishkan, and it goes through all the parts that they brought. Okay, but here is where the Torah announces all the work of the Mishkan was completed. So the commentaries are bothered by the fact that it says, Vayasu b'nei Yisrael, and b'nei Yisrael did like all that Hashem commanded Moshe. Now, they understand that this implies that when we say all the work was completed, and they did like all that Hashem commanded, so they did, that sounds like, who did the Mishkan? Who made the Mishkan? All of B'nai Yisrael. Now, if you think about it, all of B'nai Yisrael didn't make the Mishkan. Some donated, some constructed. Not everybody made it. And it, even though it doesn't say Kol B'nai Yisrael, the Sefornu and the Aruch Chaim both talk about this. What does it mean that B'nai Yisrael did? Which implies all of B'nai Yisrael did. Like all that Hashem commanded when it came to the construction. Not everybody was involved in the construction. There are certain people who were involved. People who felt they could do it. As the Ramban in last week's parasha says, even people who weren't trained in a lot of these crafts, they felt they can do it, and they came forth and they did it. But it's not everybody who did it. You had those who crafted. You had those who actually did the construction, or and the making of the garments, and you had those who donated the materials. So what does it mean? And Benes and the Jewish people did. It wasn't all the Jewish people. It was some of the Jewish people who did. We're talking about making the Mishkan. We're talking about making the garments. Not everybody did that. So says the Sefornu, which I'm sure you're thinking of. The Sefornu says, "Hapu'ula kula al shleimusa necessal yedei kol Yisrael. Ketzas ki ketzasam is nadvu mamen, uketzasam asu amalacha, benedam aslibim lasis retzayin kainam." Okay, do we know what it means? And the Bnei Yisrael did. It means that this accomplishment of the Mishkan, it came about through all of Bnei Yisrael. Some of them constructed, some of them donated. That's the Vayasu. So Vayasu, even though Vayasu means and they did, which would sound more like an action, right? Like an action, like the actual action of making it, but we can say that everybody made it because everybody did their part in making it and making it. Everybody did their part in making and having the construction of the Mishkan being made. That's how the Sefornu learns. But the Aruch Chaim has a very interesting explanation and a very fundamental explanation when it comes to mitzvahs. And on that, the Aruch Chaim says like this. Vagam, so he has two answers. One answer, he says, Vagam shalai asa ela betzala v'chach melev, although the only ones who actually did, the only ones who actually did the construction were Betzalel and the people who worked for him. He was the agent of the Jewish people. He was their agent to do it. And although they never hired him, right, it was Hashem who said he should do it. But again, you know, they all understood, they all agreed, they all understood that he was doing it on their behalf. Therefore, he was their agent. And as their agent, it's like they're doing it. So that's why it says they did it. But then says the Aruch Chaim a very important principle. Oid nira ki kan asa hakasuv mechevras haklolus bekiyam hatayra. The Torah here is establishing the idea that of the fulfillment of the entire Torah through the body of the Jewish people, the Klal Yisrael. The Jewish people as a nation, the fulfillment of the Torah by everyone comes about through them all together. The Heraki B'nai Yisrael Yizaku Zelozeh. This is showing that when it comes to the Jewish people, they merit each other. V'atayra nitna lihiskayim, the Torah can be fulfilled, B'klolos Yisrael, through the whole nation together. Kol echad yaseh ayachayla shebayadoi, each one does what he can, the Yizaku Zelozeh, and they bring merit one to the other. That means that, again, he's going to translate it into here. But it means like this. You have people who were able to do the construction. They are able to do it. Not everybody can do the construction. If I would have been there, I couldn't have done the construction. I can tell you that. Okay? And if Richie would have been there, right? Richie would have been there. He would have been constructing.
He's a construction man.
Okay? And Mr. Rainers would have been doing constructing. Mr. Gondar would have done the curtains.
Right.
Would have done the curtains, right? So you talk. So again, some people can do it and some people can't. Okay. So therefore, what? So what? So the point is, so we would say, all right, you can do this mitzvah, I can't. You got it, I don't. That's the way it goes. It's life, right? It's life. Says Aruch Chaim, that's not how it works. That's not how it works. The oneness of the Jewish people says that when I do my mitzvah, right, that I'm supposed to do, and I'm doing it the way I should do it, that mitzvah doesn't just count for me. It counts for you too, because we're all one. My mitzvah counts for you, and it can be something that you can do that I can't do. But if I'm doing what I can do and you do what you can do, then basically that is considered as the unit of the Jewish people. The unit of the Jewish people are all doing this mitzvah together. Physically, actually, there's one of them doing it, one of them's not doing it. But because we're all one, in essence, therefore it's considered like we're all doing it. And he says, Ve'ulai lazer remez ba'amrai, perhaps this is alluded to in the famous pasuk, V'avta re'acha kamaycha, you shall love your friend as yourself. Love your friend as yourself. What does it mean, at like yourself? Pirish letzachu kamaycha. You know why you should love your friend? Because kamaycha, because he's just like you. Ki b'shilumai yeitiv lach. Because when he is complete, he benefits you. U'emtza'usa yata mashem shleimusecha. And through him, you become complete. V'mkein einu acher, he's not someone else. Ela'ata atzimecha u'ke'echmecha kecha. He's just like you. He's a part of you. You know why you should love your friend like you? Because he is just like you. Because whatever he's doing, it's like you're doing it. It's like you. He's part of you. So, you love your hand? You love your ears? Right? You like them. They're doing what they do for you. That's how you look at another person. Now, ubezem atzanu nachas ruach yashem tziva tayag mitzvahs. This is a famous idea. Hashem commanded us to do 613 mitzvahs. Right? Umenanimna sheyematzei adam echad sheyeshne bekiyam kulam. There is no one person who could actually do all 613 mitzvahs. It is not possible. Vezelacha ois. And what's the biggest proof? Kayin, Levi, Yisraelim, Venashim. Yesh mitzvah say b'kayhanim shei metzias liYisrael la'asaisem. There are certain positive commandments that a kayin does a non-kayin cannot do. Yesh mitzvah liYisrael she'inim b'kayhanim. And then there are mitzvahs that a non-kayin can do that a kayin can't do. Like? I mean, it's possible for a kayin to do it, but again, there's definitely a Jew has much more chances of doing the mitzvah. He can have a kayin who would never do the mitzvah of honoring the dead. Yesh mitzvahs, okay. V'chaim b'leviyim, v'chaim b'nashim. U'ma metzias yesh liyachar l'kaimim l'hashlam tikkun l'ramach chaybar v'shasik yidav asher yechavnu lahem. So, I understand it like this. All right. So, Hashem gave 613 mitzvahs. Who says we have to fulfill all 613? There are 613. Who says they were given for every person to fulfill each one? What's the basis? Maybe not. There are 613 mitzvahs. We all have to believe in them as being a mitzvah. You know, maybe we all have. Maybe. You know, I mean, we're supposed to study them, but that's the mitzvah Talmud Torah. We know there's such a concept that through studying it's like fulfilling the mitzvah. That may be another answer to this question. But he says the point is the possibility of each individual fulfilling 613 mitzvahs is important to understand because there is a concept that how many parts of our body are there? There are 248 limbs, evarim, and there are 635 veins and sinews and stuff, right? What's the total of that? 613. The mitzvahs, each one of the mitzvahs correspond to a different part of our body, and each mitzvah is supposed to give the spiritual life to each part of the body, whether it be the body, whether it be the neshama, that part of the neshama. But there's a concept. We have 613 mitzvahs corresponding to 600 parts of our body, which means each mitzvah has to be able to be fulfilled in order to, as he says, to be mesaken, to rectify, to perfect, to sanctify our body. But if I can't do the mitzvah, how's that part of my body going to be rectified? The answer is, you don't have to do it. Someone else is going to do it. And when he does it, it's like you're doing it, because the Jewish people are one entity, one body. So when the Levi does his mitzvah, that takes care of what I need, because of the fact that, again, we're all part of one, we're part of one body, we're part of one neshama, one soul. This is what the pasuk means here, what it says, and Bnei Yisrael did like all that Hashem commanded. Kina l'kulam yachad masa kulam. The Torah basically applies to all of them together the actions of all of them. Hagam shemayhem heviu hanadava memasu malacha. Although some of them brought donations, some of them did the actual work. Yoyma klaloisem sheasu akol. The pasuk says about all of them, the Torah says about all of them that they all did it. The whole thing. Okay? Because that's the idea. The idea is that when each one of us are doing our part, that brings merit. That brings merit to the other one. When the one who did its construction did what he was supposed to do, that was considered like the other ones who didn't do construction, as if they did that mitzvah. Because we're all one. And as one, when I do my mitzvah, that helps you also. That perfects you also. It's perfecting you in this example, he's talking about situations where clearly you've got certain people doing certain mitzvahs and certain people not doing certain mitzvahs. Meaning in this case you had those who did construction, those who did donations. Kehan Levim Yisraelim, there's some very specific delineations. Some mitzvahs these ones can do, some mitzvahs those can't do. And the Aruch Chaim is saying, from here we see that when each one does their part, therefore it's considered that the other one did. And it's considered like everybody did the mitzvah. And that rectifies and sanctifies everyone through this mitzvah. I don't think it's an argument to say the same thing applies by two mitzvahs that we both can do also, right? If I can do tzedakah and you can do tzedakah, right? So does my tzedakah help you? Does your tzedakah help me? I mean, I got to do my tzedakah, you got to do your tzedakah. And the answer is definitely do. Each one of us has what we have to do. It's not going to take away, though, that what I do, right, also is considered what you do. What I do is also considered what you do. My mitzvah, when I study Torah and you study Torah, right, we're both studying Torah. We're both hopefully doing studying Torah the way we should. But the fact that, again, that we are, even though that's a situation where we're both doing something that we can do, I don't think that excludes it from this concept of the fact that every time I do a mitzvah, it's like your mitzvah too. And therefore, that's also bringing you merit. That's also elevating, it's also sanctifying you. And many times it comes out that, you know, you can have one person, let's say when it comes to Torah study, you can have one person who's able to study Torah at one level, at a higher level. Or he has more time to study. Another person doesn't have as much time. If you're doing what you're supposed to do, you know, again, you need to do your part of the mitzvah too. But at the same time, somebody else's Torah study is bringing merit to you also. It's considered like you're studying Torah. May not be the same like his studying Torah, but it's considered like you're studying Torah also. And therefore, the facts are that whatever we do to perfect ourselves, we're perfecting the other person. And we all have to recognize that it's through the perfection and through the growth and through the performance of mitzvahs and growth that comes from what our friends do, that affects us. It's considered like we're doing it also, and it affects us also. And then he.
In this case, there is some example. For example, you make mitzvah, and because of you, I cannot do it. You come and you make mitzvah instead of me.
What does that mean?
No, but because you said this, I cannot perform everything.
Yeah.
But it looks somebody can do one part, somebody else. It means as a group we can make all of them.
Not just as a nation.
But what is the example? For example, I cannot do one mitzvah, but you can do instead of me.
It's not instead.
No, but.
It's considered like you did it also. So, for instance, I'll give you an example. I have money to give tzedakah, you don't. You don't, right? you don't have money to give tzedakah right now. Let's say I have money to give tzedakah. So when I do my mitzvah of tzedakah, because of the fact that we're all one, we're the Jewish nation are considered one, one body, one soul. When I give tzedakah, it's like you're giving tzedakah too.
What do you mean me? You mean every...
You and him and him and him and him.
Everybody who gave tzedakah, it's counted for all Jews?
To yeah. some degree, yes.
It's being yes. given from the shul.
Yes.
Even. All right, well.
That's not the point. Yes. Yes. Every mitzvah that one Jew does, it's considered like every Jew is doing it. To a degree. Now, doesn't mean like, oh, I don't got to do it now, right? Oh, he did it, I don't have to do it. That's not what we're saying. But what we're saying is that to a certain degree, it counts for you also. My mitzvah that I do that sanctifies me and elevates me does it for you too. And probably in a situation where you, yeah, okay, I'm not going to go.
But, for example, I never heard this idea. For example, somebody is really sick, is not able to do some mitzvahs. Somebody can do something for him or not?
When you say can do for him, what do you mean? If he's too sick, right, that he can't come to Davin, right?
No, but the different thing he's not able to do.
Fine. So he's not able to do when someone else does it,
yeah.
It counts. It's as if he's doing it too.
What this is. It means my mitzvah is not counted for somebody else.
To some degree, yes. Yes. That's how I understand this. Yeah. Now, again, it doesn't mean, right, that, you know, one morning, if you're going to say, you know what, I'm not going to davening, you know, oh, the rabbi's going to daven, you know, and his davening is going to count for me, so I ain't got to daven this morning. That's not going to help you. When you got to do it yourself, you have to do it yourself. Then somebody else isn't going to help you, I would think. But in a situation where you can't, or you can't do it the same. Or maybe even if you did it also, my mitzvah also counts for you. It's like you did the mitzvah twice, maybe.
But what in the case you, for example, it's Shabbat, you say for Kaddish.
Kiddush for everyone? That's a different idea. That's a different idea. No, because that idea says, right, that idea says that even the act you don't have to do anymore. I mean, if you have an act, right, every person has a mitzvah to make Kiddush. Every person has to make Kiddush. But there's an idea that when I do it, it's exactly like you did it. Okay? And therefore, you fulfilled your mitzvah. You don't got to do it again. Right?
But it is not what it
means. No, that's not what this is. This is a lower level. Okay. All right. The next thing that I'd like to discuss is, let's see. All right. The next pasuk. Pasuk Lamed Gimel. Vayaviu es ha-mishkan o-Moshe. They brought the mishkan to Moshe. So Rashi tells us here that what happened is like this. So it says everything was completed. It says they brought the Mishkan to Moshe, all the different parts. Okay. And so why did they bring it to Moshe? So Rashi says, they had a problem. They were not able to set it up. They couldn't set up the Mishkan. Being that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't do anything in the Mishkan. You know, he was in charge. He was making announcements. But he didn't do anything. Therefore, he niach leHakadosh Baruch Hu hakamasai. When it came to the actual erection of the Mishkan, that was left for Moshe to do. Shlo yahaya yachal lakim ayshum adam machmas kayved hakroshim shein kayach ba'adam lezakfan. The boards that made the walls of the Mishkan, they were too heavy, they were too large for a person to be able to pick them up. That's what it says. Shlo yahaya yachal lakim ayshum adam. No one could erect, could lift them up, could set them up. Because of the weight of the beams, no one had the strength to stand them up. But Moshe did it. Well, when it came before Moshe, Moshe says to Hashem, Eichav shemekamas ha'idei Adam, basically, I can't do this. Alamalei, aseik atabi yadcha, basically, do, you know, get do it with your hand. V'nira kamakimai, and it appears like he's setting it up. But really, it's basically standing up on its own. So no one was really able, no one had the strength, the ability to actually lift up these things. No one had the ability to lift up these beams. So they brought it to Moshe. Moshe says to Hashem, I can't do it. Hashem says, just do it. And just do it. And the wording is, it looks like he's setting it up, but it's going up on its own. What's the point of this? What do we need to know this for? What is the Medrash teaching us exactly? Now, it also seems to me from this Rashi that it doesn't say that Moshe got superhuman strength and he set it up. It doesn't say that. It says, Asek b'yatcha, you know, do it. And it appears like he's picking it up, but it's really going up by itself. It doesn't sound like Moshe was given superhuman strength to do it. He really had no strength to do it. He just, like Hashem says, just do it. Just pick it up. And it's going to look like, and it looked like he picked it up, but it really went up by itself. Now, anybody who watched this, what were they thinking? Wow, look how strong Moshe is. Or did they also realize what these words say, which is that really, yeah, Moshe was going through the motion, but he wasn't the one doing this. It was really happening on its own. But the Rebbeinu Shlomo wanted someone to do it. He left it for Moshe to do it, but he really wasn't doing it. So it seemed to me that, or I would argue that everybody realized that. It's not like, you know, it was a secret between Hashem and Moshe Rabbeinu. You know, it's not really him. It just looks like him. No, everybody recognized that, no, Moshe Rabbeinu did it all of a sudden, like the bodybuilder, the weightlifters, all of a sudden, had the strength to pick it up. You know, that wasn't what it was. They realized that he's like basically walking over to this thing and flicking it up, picking it up as if he could pick it up, but he couldn't. And it's just going up on its own. Everybody realized that. Why was it so important for that to be seen, if that's true? What is it so important that the Mishkan's erection should come about in this kind of manner? In a manner that it's very clear no one's doing it, right? No one's really doing it. It's happening by itself. But Moshe had to do it. I mean, if nobody could do it, so it should have just been, one, two, three, it goes up. Well, what has anybody got to do it for? So perhaps the answer to this is that the Rebbeinu Shlomo was trying to teach the Jewish people a lesson. They just completed a major project, right? A major project. A project of donating and building and construction, and not just construction, but artistic construction, skilled construction. They just finished a major project. And they could have walked, they were, and it's very possible that they were thinking to themselves, wow, look what we did. Look what we did. The Rebbeinu Shlomo wanted to make it very clear to them. You didn't make the Mishkan. You can't make the Mishkan. You were going through the motions, and I made the Mishkan. Just like Moshe Rabbeinu now is just going through the motions. He's not really setting it up. You should know that that is what happened with this construction. It looks like you did it, but in essence, all you were doing were going through the motions. Because in anything that we do in life, in anything, it's we do, the Rebbeinu Shlomo accomplishes. Our actions are not what brings about the accomplishment. And our obligation is to act, is to do. Yeah, our actions should be focused towards what would appear to be a goal or an accomplishment from our actions. But we can never, we never look at our accomplishments as we accomplished it. No, we went through the motions. Hashem says, go through the motions. And after we do the motions, Hashem brings about the accomplishment. And that becomes very clear when we get involved in things that we have no idea about what kind of success they will bring, and the success comes. You know, maybe it's harder when you're, you know, taking a hammer and a nail and putting it together and like saying, oh, you didn't do it. It's a lot harder than when, you know, you go over to somebody, let's say, and try to convince them something, right, and it works, you know. They're like, wow, how did that happen? But the truth is, it's that's the way we have to understand everything, even construction, where there was so much work and involvement in work and involvement. The lesson from Moshe Rabbeinu was, but for this act was, that all we do are the motions. We don't bring about the final product. The final product is the Ribbono Shel Olam. Everything is Ribbono Shel Olam. We just have to do the, we have to do the motions. And perhaps that was very important to do by Moshe Rabbeinu himself. Moshe Rabbeinu himself, even Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't have the power to do it. Even what he does isn't truly the power. It's only the Ribbono Shel Olam.
Could it mean that he, when Shlomo HaMelech built the